Fires up the middle. Base hit. Rios scores. Here comes Escobar. It's 3-1. Another 3-2. That's a ground ball into right center. In the score is Hosmer. Over to third is Morales, and it's 4-1. And this crowd celebrates a four-run fifth. Here's one into center. Back is Lagares, over his head. Gordon scores. Flying to third is Escobar. They just keep coming. Broken back, fly ball, right field. How about Cueto? Royals up 2-0.
And those are some of the highlights. Joe Buck with the call. Game 2 of the 2015 World Series. Royals winning that ballgame 7-1 to take a 2-0 lead over the Mets. Remember, Johnny Cueto was faced against Jacob DeGrom. DeGrom, of course, got even better after that. The Royals were down 1-0 in the bottom of the fifth, exploded for 4 runs, and then 3 more insurance runs in the eighth. Escobar had a single, scored Gordon. And then Hosmer's single scored Rios and Escobar, as you heard. Moustakas' single scored Hosmer. And Gordon in the eighth doubled to left. Moustakas scored. And then Orlando hit a sac fly. Perez scored. Escobar tripled deep center. And Gordon scored. And that game, along with Game 5 of the ALDS, which I was fortunate enough to watch in person after the Royals, somehow came from behind in Game 4 in Houston, down 6-2 in the eighth. Came back and won Game 4. So they went back to Kansas City Game 5. And who was the pitcher for Game 5 against the Houston Astros?
Cueto.
Johnny Cueto.
Yes.
And he had a masterpiece.
Yes.
And then in Game 2 of the World Series, he was not very good against the Blue Jays in the ALCS. He was horrible in Toronto. But he had 2 great starts in the Royals' career, and really only 2. Because remember, they picked him up before the trade deadline, and the Royals gave up a lot. We talked about on the show, are the Royals making the right decision? I was excited they went for it. There are a lot of people saying this is a no-brainer, blah, 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 but we had to throw it out there, and we said at the time, this is only a great move if the Royals win at all. And if the Royals don't win at all, it is a bad trade. And Cueto was not very good at all for the Royals when he came over to Kansas City. I went to a game where he was out in the second or third inning at Coppin Stadium. He got booed. He was brutal. He was not good at all. But... was he worth everything they traded to get Johnny Cueto for a few months? The answer is unequivocally, heck yeah, because of 2 performances. Game 5 against the Astros at Kauffman Stadium, that they had to win, and they did, and he pitched a gem. And then Game 2, they didn't have to win. They're up 1-0, but Cueto was much better at Kauffman than he was on the road, obviously, especially in the playoffs. But the regular season, there were a lot of people saying, what's wrong with Cueto? Cueto's messed up. Royals gave up too much. Maybe Cueto's hurt. And Cueto pitched a 2-hitter against the Mets in Game 2. It was complete control of that ball game. And then Hosmer with a key RBI hit to give him the lead 3-1. Johnny Cueto, those 2 starts against the Astros Game 5 and the Mets in Game 2, that's why that trade was completely worth it. Now, the question I would have is, what if the Royals would have lost to the Mets in, say, 7 games? And Cueto would have had to have another start. We don't know how he would have fared. So we don't know. But let's say that was it. Cueto didn't start another game, and the Royals somehow lost the series to the Mets. Would you still say it's a great trade? And I would say no, because they didn't win at all. Even though the same 2 performances stood out.
Yeah, there was one
goal.
Thing that needed to happen.
When you go get Zobrist and Cueto and give up a lot in the farm system, it means you're going for it, which we love that. But there's a price to pay, and there was eventually down the line, and we're feeling it now. But it was worth it because you won a World Series championship.
Yes.
You go for it.
I think everything holds true today.
Yeah,
that held
that
true
we
back
talked
then.
About then.
I mean, I don't
right.
think it's any different.
No,
it's
I agree.
Not different for me.
No,
I, me
neither.
You know, okay, cool. Johnny, if they lose in Game 7, it'd be like, oh, yeah, cool. Johnny Cueto had 2 great games, but...
But that's all he did.
Where's the trophy?
Yeah, exactly. And odds are, when it's Game 7, that means he wasn't successful because he probably would have pitched in Game 6 or 7.
Yeah, 6 probably would have been his next time up since they have a day off.
Yeah, it would have been at home.
Yeah,
exactly. And Cueto was fantastic in game two, a two-hitter, and the Royals won. They replayed that last night at Fox Sports Kansas City. You can watch game four because they're going to skip over game three. Yordan Ventura did not pitch well.
I don't want to watch Syndergaard.
And Syndergaard, of course, throwing at Escobar's head. Mets won 9-3 in game three, so the Mets were back in the series. But then the Royals, of course, rallied in game four, rallied in game five, rallied in all four of their wins, rallied in about every win they had in the playoffs that year.
Yeah.
I remember that game against David Price and the Blue Jays where they were in trouble, and then the botch play in shallow right field between the right fielder and the second baseman, and that opened the floodgates, and Price was dominating the Royals. I mean, the Royals caught some breaks, but they took advantage of them. And as Joe Buck said, the Royals just keep coming, and they did that year. Just next man up, keep the line moving, and they were so fun to watch. And then, of course, the speed that they had, too, maybe more so in 14 and 15, but still, their defense was phenomenal, and they got some key starting pitching. You know, Chris Young was really good in relief in that first game, but Edison Volquez really pitched well in the playoffs for the most part. He was a great pickup by Dayton Moore, and everything Dayton Moore touched those 2 years turned to gold, and then everything since, not so much. Once they started signing, when they signed Gordon, and didn't make a major play for Zobrist, although I don't know if Zobrist would have stayed or not. But, yeah, Game 2 went to the Royals, and Game 4, when the Royals take a 3-1 lead, you can watch tonight on Fox Sports Kansas City at 7 o'clock. And then Game 5, the clincher, tomorrow night on Fox Sports Kansas City at 7 o'clock. And if you want to watch the ALCS Game 7 back from 1985 when the Royals beat the Blue Jays and George Brett and Frank White and all them, it's available at noon on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. You can watch that. And then so that's the schedule for the rest of the week with Fox Sports Kansas City or that ALCS Classic Game 7 on Friday. So it's kind of fun to relive that stuff, especially when your team, you know, wins.
Oh, yeah. I can relive everything. Yeah, I got done watching The Last Dance the other night, and I watched the Super Bowl right after that.
Yeah,
the Chiefs won. I'm like, let's end it on a good night.
You know, it's funny. Somebody was saying the other day, is like, there's nothing good that's happened in 2020, and I said the Chiefs won the Super Bowl.
Yes.
I know it seems a long time ago, but that was very good. But if you're not a Chiefs fan, then that doesn't apply.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
49ers fans can say there's nothing good that's happening.
Well, I could say yes because Mahomes saved, 100,000 people from getting COVID-19 at a parade. Come on now. You can spin any which way you want. All right. The NCAA Division II, you'll see fewer games on the schedules for Washburn, Emporia State, Fort Hays State. The NCAA Division II President's Council announced adjustments yesterday to the maximum number of contests allowed for all sports in the upcoming school year. This is just D2. They say it's a response to help schools manage economic fallout from the COVID-19 pandemic. With decisions still looming on the fall sports season, football will allow 10 games instead of 11. Volleyball dropped 6 matches, so no more than 20. Previously, it was 26. Among other sports, basketball goes from a maximum of 26 to 22. In addition, conference challenge and tip-off classic events will count towards the total this year rather than being exempt. Softball drops 12 games to 44. Baseball loses 10 games, allowing 40 instead of 50. And that is the new schedule situation for NCAA Division II for the upcoming sports season, which means that we seemed optimistic that we're going to have sports.
Yeah.
Division One, the NCAA Council is going to vote today whether to allow on-campus voluntary workouts for college football. Technically, the vote before the council will be whether to extend an NCAA memoriam on athletic activities for all sports that's set to expire on May 31st. But with conference and schools now modeling their own return-to-play plans on or around June 1st, the momentum seems to be that at least voluntary football workouts are going to resume soon. Some of this stuff is starting to sound encouraging as long as we don't have monstrous flare-ups of the coronavirus, says Council Vice Chair John Steinbrecher. The NCAA, they have a 40-person council vote. It's weighted by conference. It'd take a simple majority to lift the moratorium, which means 21 vote in favor. Then that's what's going to happen, so forth and so on. So stay tuned, but I would expect that to perhaps pass.
Yes.
The way things are going, unless new information comes to light. The Chicago Bulls, The Last Dance, it concluded on Sunday. And this, I think, is why Jordan hesitated to have it done. So many people are like, why did Jordan wait and hesitate? And why did he wait so long? Why did it take a whole bunch of convincing for him to allow them to do the docuseries, The Last Dance? Well, if you don't know the answer to that question yet, I guess I'll try to help you now. Michael Jordan, it was reported, was really concerned that he'd come off as a villain, not a villain necessarily, but as a mean-spirited person, as a tyrant, so forth and so on. But also, you knew in any kind of 10 episode, which is 10 hours of a show, that there's going to be something controversial in there somehow, some way. There wasn't time to talk to every single former Bulls teammate or every single former Bulls opponent. There just wasn't. And I think you could have had 20, 30, 40 episodes of this thing, and it still would have been riveting. That's just my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
At least for me, because I grew up with it. So did Dusty. But here's an interesting nugget, because there's been a lot of talk about Jordan's leadership. And I've seen a lot of people go a little bit too far on social media, because I don't think they would want somebody to quite do what Jordan did with their high school team. All right?
Yeah.
I'm just saying. I don't think that would be kosher. Robert Parrish was a really good basketball player. Did he make the Hall of Fame? I don't know. But he was really good. He was part of the Celtics, won championships there. Robert Parrish left the Celtics in 1994 for Charlotte, where he played two seasons. His final year in the league was in 96-97, when he played with Michael Jordan in Chicago and won another ring. There, he regained an appreciation for Larry Bird's leadership style. Listen to this quote from Robert Parrish, who played with Bird, all right? And he also apparently, you know, knew something about Magic, of course, and everything, so forth. So this is what Robert Parrish said, and I quote, "What set Larry Bird apart from Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan was that Bird wasn't an in-your-face leader like they were. He had too much respect for us. If you weren't having a good night, he was more inclined to encourage you or not say anything at all. But Magic and Jordan would jump all over you." That's the quote from Robert Parrish. In one of his first practices with the Bulls, Parrish botched one of the plays and was amused to find Jordan jawing at him just inches from his face. Parrish replied, and Parrish says, "I told MJ, I'm not as enamored with you as these other guys. I've got some rings, too. At that point, Jordan told me, I'm going to kick your ass. I took one step closer and said, no, you really aren't. After that, he didn't bother me again." You know what's interesting? That sounds like somebody standing up to a bully.
I mean, well, yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you gotta be respected. And that was maybe Jordan's way of testing Parrish, even though Parrish was older and more experienced than Jordan. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll tell you one person I really thought about last night that I haven't really seen too many comments from, and that's Tony Dungy. And you may say, Tony Dungy, he's a football coach. What's that got to do with Michael Jordan? Tony Dungy was a guy who didn't curse. He won a Super Bowl without cursing and screaming and yelling at his players. And I really wonder what Tony Dungy thinks, or when he was watching Last Dance and reading all these stories about Jordan going after his teammates. What does he think? I'm curious. I'd like to know. I'm guessing he's not cool with it.
No. I mean, I've read both of his books.
Yeah.
And, none of this kind of style even touched the Tony Dungy Colts or the Buccaneers when he was there, too.
Right.
You know, and he's not... He's not in support of it. I can pretty well guarantee you that.
So,
Robert Parrish was a Hall of Famer, by the way.
Okay,
I thought he was, but I didn't want to say it without looking.
I was the same way. Yeah. I thought he was.
And it was funny because I was talking about that last week. I was like, I wonder. It'd be cool to hear from Robert Parrish.
There you go.
Because he was on both. He's on the really good team with the Celtics, and
he was on that Celtics team when the Bulls and Jordan scored 63 in that double or overtime thriller. In the 86 playoffs. Of course, that's one of the greatest teams of all time, that 85-86 Celtic team won 67 games. So why did Jordan maybe hesitate to do this docuseries? Well, I'll give you another example. First of all, I'll give you all kinds of examples. Craig Hodges is not happy because he didn't like how Michael Jordan mentioned that basically everybody was doing cocaine with the one Bulls team. Mm-hmm. He was a member of that team. He didn't do cocaine, so he didn't appreciate that comment. Scottie Pippen reportedly isn't super thrilled with the way he was portrayed in the docuseries, according to reports, although he technically hasn't come out and said anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, Isaiah Thomas wasn't happy. And then, of course, Jordan don't care. And then there's Horace Grant, which I've been wondering when we're going to hear from Horace. I figured we would. I didn't know when.
Yeah.
Well, the answer is now. Horace Grant... Jordan said that Horace is the one that was the snitch that leaked that information for Sam Smith's book that really revealed some interesting things behind the scenes about Jordan and the Bulls. Grant has always denied he was the source, but on Tuesday, yesterday, he gave his most forceful rebuttal yet. During an interview with ESPN Radio in Chicago, Horace Grant called Michael Jordan's claims a downright lie and said Jordan was the one who was actually a snitch, which Grant termed the film a so-called documentary. This is interesting. Here's Horace Grant's response in full. You ready? Have you read this yet?
I haven't.
All right. Tell me what you think. This is Horace Grant. And I quote, "That is a downright, outright, completely lie. Lie, lie, lie. And as I stated, if MJ had a grudge with me, let's settle it like men. Let's talk about it, or we can settle it another way. Yet and still, he puts out this lie out that I was the source behind it. Sam," he's talking about Sam Smith, the writer of the book, that one book, or multiple books, "Sam Smith and I have always been great friends. We're still great friends. But the sanctity of that locker room, I would never put anything personal out there. The mere fact that Sam Smith was an investigative reporter, that he had to have two sources, two, to write a book. Why would MJ just point me out? It's only a grudge, man, and I think he proved that during the so-called documentary. If you say something about him, he's going to cut you off. He's going to try to destroy your character. I mean, Charles Barkley, they've been friends for over 20, 30 years, and he said something about Michael's management with the Charlotte Bobcats or Charlotte Hornets, and they haven't spoken since. My point is, MJ says I was a snitch. But still, after 35 years, he brings up his rookie year going into one of his teammates' rooms and seeing coke and weed and women. My point is, why did he want to bring that up? What does that got to do with anything? If you want to call somebody a snitch, that's a damn snitch right there." Thoughts?
I mean, he's not wrong.
I'm going to say he's not. That last point is a very good point.
I think
Jordan did not have to mention anything about that.
Throughout the series, like, why are you snitching on people, man?
I mean, Jordan didn't have to say anything about that.
When he has the whole, you know, the video with Scotty Burrell saying, your son's an alcoholic, you know?
Right, like, right.
What are you doing, man?
And he knew there was video recording, you know, and he played it up. That's no big deal, but the... For the most part.
But, yeah, they were saying that right away with the traveling circus.
Right.
Why you got to snitch, man?
Yeah, right, right. Exactly, exactly. So, you know, he mentions the coke and the weed and the women and all that. He didn't have to mention any of that.
No.
And he did. So I see where Grant's saying. He's like, dude, you're talking about me snitching, ratting somebody out. You've ratted that out 30-some years later. And now people, you know, Craig Hodges has a daughter or a son seeing that going, Dad, you were on that team. You did cocaine.
Yeah.
And you suddenly got to answer a question you're not comfortable with.
Yeah.
So I get that part of Horace Grant, what he's saying. I do not believe Horace Grant that he didn't give something.
I don't either.
I think Horace Grant, I think MJ's not going to go, I mean, MJ's not going to say it that authoritatively if he doesn't know something. Yeah. But at the same time, Jordan made up a complete story about LeBradford Smith. So we know Jordan's capable of lying or making stuff up.
Yeah.
But, you know, once again, the truth lies somewhere in between. But I do get Horace Grant's point about MJ, when somebody crosses him, you've crossed him. I think it's very clear.
Oh, yeah.
Barkley's a great example. And then, you know, mentioning the snitch part is a great point because it is kind of contradictory that Jordan's critical of Grant for snitching, and now all these years later, here's Jordan mentioning something like that. Although technically, Jordan's not part of a team anymore, and Grant was when he supposedly snitched.
Yeah.
And he is right. It takes two sources to write the book, so somebody else did something. So why is it just Horace Grant? Listen, I don't know where the fallout came with Horace Grant and Michael Jordan. Obviously, Jordan went after Grant. There are reports that Jordan didn't allow Grant to eat on the plane after he had a bad game. Okay? So that seems extreme. And if that's true. And the other thing that, you know, Horace Grant left the Bulls, but that was after Jordan left the Bulls to go to play baseball. So if Jordan has any ill feelings for Grant because he left for more money to go to Orlando, then Jordan doesn't understand. But maybe he doesn't understand that point because he might feel betrayed that Horace didn't stay in Chicago. Well, why would he? Jordan's the one left first.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody feels betrayed, it might be Grant, you know?
Yeah.
It is interesting, the whole thing. It really is.
There's so many layers to all of it.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like you can't even,
that's why you could have
like
40
you said,
episodes.
I mean, you could have more people talking more. Horace Grant was in this thing, too. So,
yes.
You know, and he said during the documentary that he wasn't the whisker,
right.
Mm-hmm. the snitch or whatever, whistleblower is the term this day and age. But, he was in it, and he spoke his piece multiple times. So we know where Horace stands on that, where he thinks he's at on that anyway.
He was a key part of that 91, 92, 93 run, no doubt. Without him, they don't win it.
Oh, no.
There's an article on CBSSports.com about all the people that Jordan and the Bulls went through. The Bulls, during that run, beat 20 Hall of Famers in the postseason, eliminated 20 Hall of Famers. They eliminated seven 60-win teams. And so there's an article here about what if Jordan wasn't in the way? How would we think of these players if Jordan was not in the way? You with me?
Mm-hmm.
We start with Karl Malone. Karl Malone, NBA superstar, two-time MVP, didn't win a title, but his last 2 years, the Bulls won. The Bulls barely beat the Jazz. They went six games, and it could easily gone seven. And Karl Malone is one of the best power forwards of all time, but he didn't have a championship. Seems to be held against him. Karl Malone was asked for over 2 years to be on camera and do an interview on the Bulls docuseries, and he said no. Nope, not going to do it. No way, Jose, not going to do it. Even though he showed him how sportsmanlike he was on the bus during the docuseries with Jordan and them. How would we think of Karl Malone had he won a title or two? Malone was a two-time MVP. He's one of only 13 players in the history of the NBA to win two or more MVPs. He is the second all-time leading scorer in the NBA and the eighth all-time in rebounds. And yet, I'm not trying to, you know, and here's the question. Is Tim Duncan a center or a power forward? You got to decide that. If Tim Duncan's a power forward, then you got to sit here and go, why is Duncan better than Malone? Now, you're a Spurs fan. You'll be biased, and I get that. But, and I'm not saying that Malone is better than Duncan, but Malone's got some pretty impressive things I just gave you.
Mm-hmm.
Duncan doesn't have as many points. I don't know where he stands all time in rebounds. Obviously, Duncan has more championships. Duncan, was he a two-time MVP? I don't know.
I got to look him up here. I was just actually doing that.
And that could be a whole discussion for another day as, you know, rating the best power forwards in NBA history. The problem with Duncan sometimes is...
I know he's a three-time finals MVP.
People label him as a center. Some people label Duncan as a power forward.
Yeah, he's a two-time MVP.
Two-time MVP. Okay, so it was Karl Malone.
Yeah.
So really, if you... And granted, they're different players. But the really biggest difference between Karl Malone and Tim Duncan is Duncan has five rings, right?
Yeah,
rings. And Malone has zero. But Duncan didn't have to go through Jordan to win a ring.
No, he didn't.
And Malone had to. So what would we think of Karl Malone? Wouldn't we think of him a lot more highly if he just won one or two titles?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's
so Jordan squashed Malone's legacy.
A little bit, yeah, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
How about John Stockton? You know, John Stockton, he actually went on camera finally. They tried for a long time. Stockton is the all-time NBA assist leader. He has over 15,800 assists. That's 3,700 more than the next guy on the list, which is Jason Kidd. He, in his career, he shot 51.5% from the floor. Did you know that? That's amazing.
Yeah,
and he wasn't considered a great outside shooter. That's the fourth highest any point guard in NBA history. He did it over 19 seasons. If the Jazz had beaten the Bulls twice, perhaps Stockton takes Pippen's place as the most underrated all-time great in NBA history, or he's in the running as the best point guard ever. I mean... I've always kind of sat here, and I think John Stockton's got to be so tired of the Isaiah Thomas should have been on the Dream Team. To me, is a complete slap in the face of John Stockton.
Mm-hmm.
John Stockton was a terrific player, and he's a Hall of Famer, and so is Isaiah Thomas. So it's like, you know, it's a very thin line as to who do you think's better. I mean, you may say Isaiah, I may say Stockton, and you both have an argument. So I think Stockton's disrespected more, in my opinion, by the fact that people, or Isaiah disrespects him more, not that he means to, per se, that I should have been in over Stockton. You know, at the time, maybe so. I'd have to go back in the time machine and be there in 1992. All I know is John Stockton was pretty doggone good. But what would people think of John Stockton if the Jazz would have won one or two titles and beat the Bulls?
It's different.
It'd be different, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
What about Gary Payton? Gary Payton had a chance to win a ring. He eventually did with the Miami Heat as a veteran player. But that was right in the prime of Gary Payton's career. You know, would that change how people think of Gary Payton? I would think so.
Yeah.
What about Reggie Miller? Miller was a great player, clutch player, but never won the NBA championship. What if the Pacers beat the Bulls in 98? They go on and beat the Jazz? I think not, but never know.
Yeah.
Okay, what about Reggie? What about Larry Bird? And you may say, well, Bird was before the Jordan got and the Bulls got great. That's true. However, who was the head coach of the Pacers in Game 7, the Eastern Conference Finals in 1998?
Larry Bird.
Larry Bird. Imagine if the Pacers win that game and, as I said, go on and beat Utah in NBA Finals. Larry Bird then would have all kinds of rings as a player. He'd have a ring as a head coach, and he'd be considered maybe one of the best combined player/coaches in NBA history, or executives. Because he won Executive of the Year in the front office, did Larry Bird. Interesting point. Hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
What about Patrick Ewing? The Bulls eliminated him four times. Listen, I think Patrick Ewing was one of the most overrated players. When I watched him, I didn't think he was as good as people said he was, so forth and so on. And, of course, Jordan stopped Ewing from winning a college basketball title as well. Mm-hmm. Imagine what Patrick Ewing's legacy would be if the Bulls weren't in the way of the Knicks. Would the Knicks have gone to the finals more often? Absolutely. Would the Knicks have won a finals? I don't know. I'm not convinced they would have. Obviously, Thomas stopped the Bulls from winning in 90 and even 89 with the Pistons, and even, you know, 88. But Jordan stopped the Pistons from getting a three-peat.
Yes.
Okay, so what would that mean for the legacy of Isaiah Thomas if the Pistons got a three-peat? And then where would Phil Jackson be without Michael Jordan? We know the story that, you know, Jerry Krause wanted Phil to take over Doug Collins, run the triangle, learned it from Tex Winter. He was learning from Tex Winter that whole time on the bench that last season before they decided to go with Phil Jackson. If there's no Michael Jordan, does Phil Jackson go on to win 11 championships as a coach? What about Scottie Pippen? Does he become the alpha leader and he leads the Bulls to greatness without Michael, and Pippen's thought of even higher today? We'll never know, yeah. But it's kind of interesting. What if Jordan wasn't part of the Bulls from that standpoint? But here's another couple that aren't in this article. What's Charles Barkley's legacy?
Mm-hmm.
If the Suns, if John Paxson misses that shot and the Bulls lose to the Suns in 7 games, after Paxson misses in game 6, they go 7. That would have been in Phoenix. What about Clyde Drexler? He won a title with Houston, but he would have had multiple championships had he won one with Portland in 92.
Yeah.
And remember, that series was tied 2-2.
Mm-hmm.
So it is interesting. I just gave you a ton of unbelievably great players, and Jordan ruined it for them and 20 Hall of Famers.
Yeah, it's...
You wonder why Jordan's considered the GOAT? That's one of the reasons right there, is that he stopped a whole bunch of Hall of Famers and never lost the NBA Finals. And, you know, when he lost to Orlando and Shaq in 95 and Penny Hardaway, 95, he didn't have a power forward on the team, and he had played only 17 regular season games, and they still pushed the Magic to 6.
Yeah.
In 94, he wasn't on the team. So from 91 to 98, Jordan won 6 titles in 8 years. When he played the whole year, they won every time. And the one year he played and they didn't win it, he didn't win 100% coming back from baseball and played 17 regular season games, and they still pushed the Magic to 6 and could easily made that 7-game series. I mean, it's just amazing what Jordan did, no doubt. But it is interesting, now that docuseries is out there, there is some criticism, and that, I think, mm-hmm. is what Jordan was a little bit concerned about.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you talk about all those legacies. I mean, there's no question that because there was a lull in between those 2 three-peats, that Hakeem Olajuwon won is respected way more than a lot of those other stars of that day.
That's a great point.
Because his team won 2 championships in a row right in between there.
That's a great point.
You know,
point.
He's and you know, the one year they had some injuries, they were the 6th seed, but they were still one of the best teams there. And that was when
Drexler may not get one.
Yeah, and Drexler might not get one, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so there's no doubt that Hakeem is respected and looked at a little bit differently,
yes.
than guys like Patrick Ewing, than guys,
yes.
like Karl Malone and John Stockton.
That's a great point.
When really they were they were still the same kind of stars of that era.
Right.
I mean, Hakeem, I mean, he was the number one pick the year Jordan, right. was drafted. But, you know, that era had their stars.
Mm-hmm.
And he's looked at a little bit differently because he's got 2 championships. There's no question about that.
Well, what was it, 94? Of course, that was the NBA Finals between Houston and the Knicks, and the O.J. Simpson,
yeah.
thing popped,
yeah.
up during the finals. I remember all that. Ewing was denied by Olajuwon, so Jordan, mm-hmm. didn't stand his way, and Olajuwon stopped him. Olajuwon was clearly the better player. You make an excellent point. I hadn't thought about that. Like, if Jordan and the Bulls stuck together, would the Rockets have won in 94 or 95? And that was a team the Bulls were concerned about. Jordan talked about how that was a guy we didn't match up with at all.
No, not at all.
Okay. So 94-95, let's say the Bulls do win in 94-95 to keep the gang together. But obviously the wear and tear of all those seasons. And then after they win 5 in a row, they break apart, or 6 in a row. Then all of a sudden, the Jazz may win 2 championships.
Yeah.
I mean, or the Pacers win a championship. Who knows what happens? We've talked about before. What happens if Phil Jackson comes back in 99 and the Bulls keep the band together? Phil does not take a year off like he did in 99. Would he have bolted from the Bulls in 99 and go to the Lakers in 2000 with Kobe and Shaq? And if he didn't, would Kobe and Shaq and Lakers won those titles? A friend of mine, he believes that the Spurs in 99 would have wiped the Bulls in the NBA Finals had they played. He says, who's going to guard Duncan? And my comeback is, who's going to guard Jordan?
Yeah.
I mean, You know,
Spurs had a really good defensive team, but
they did.
The Knicks didn't have anybody like that.
The Knicks
that they had to deal
and
with.
And the East was not that good that year. I think the Bulls, if they could have stayed healthy in 99, I think they would have made the finals, especially with the lockout. But whether they beat the Spurs, I think they would have, just because of Jordan. But I don't know. And that might be a stretch that they would have beat the Spurs in 99. But after that, I just don't think it would have went any further.
If Rodman's still there, he would have had a little motivation.
Well, yeah, but I see. I don't know if Rodman would have been there. And then the question is, would the Bulls have got a power forward? If they had no Rodman and no power forward, then the Spurs win.
No, without a doubt.
Yeah. I agree with you. So anyway, it's kind of interesting to talk about what ifs, so forth and so on. You know, you go back to the Royals and how we started the show. What if the Royals don't get Johnny Cueto?
Yeah.
The Royals still could have won it. I mean, who knows who pitches Game 5 against the Astros, and who knows who pitches Game 2 of the World Series. Maybe the Royals win it in 6 or 7 games instead of in 5 if Cueto doesn't pitch Game 2, he's not on the team. I mean, we don't know.
Absolutely not.
You know, I will say this. I don't think the Royals win the World Series without Ben Zobrist.
I'll agree with that.
You cool with that?
Yeah.
And I think you could argue the Royals don't win at all without Cueto, too, because of those great performances. But we'll never know.
No.
And that's the great thing about that part.
Thankfully, it worked out. We don't have to worry about
exactly,
it.
Exactly.
No hypotheticals there.
No doubt. You know, and that's the fun thing. Like, so then my buddy tells me, well, if Phil would have stuck around 99 and Phil doesn't go to the Lakers right away, the Spurs would have won a couple more titles. Well, first of all, okay, everybody would have done things differently in regards to moves they made, signing players. Pop might have got tired of winning and retired early. Duncan, who knows? I mean, we don't know. It's like, oh, okay, so Phil's on Lakers. Well, chalk up 2 more championships for Pop and the Spurs. How do you do that?
Portland and Sacramento might have had something to say about
they
that.
They were
too,
pretty good,
Phil
too.
To,
yeah. Yeah.
As much as I love the Spurs, you know, I feel like Portland was probably going to have something to say about that.
And
I mean,
Sacramento
it's all
had a great
the first
team.
Year.
We talked about Sacramento the other day off the air. They had a great team.
Yeah.
They lost to the Lakers in 7. Yeah. So
even as a Spurs fan, I'm not going to be like, nah, they were going to win those teams.
Yeah. You just automatically forget everybody else because you would have been in place of the Lakers in the NBA Finals. Yeah. But would you have beaten those teams the Lakers beat in the Finals? Yeah, possibly. But would you have gotten by the teams in the West to get to the NBA Finals? And the West was really tough at that time.
Listen, there was a distinct change in the guard from conference. Yes. Right in 98 when
the Bulls
and
broke up.
The Bulls and everything broke up.
All the power
went
west
right then.
You went
and
Spurs.
It has never come back.
Spurs, Lakers, and then eventually, of course, Warriors.
Yeah, and it has never come back.
Nope.
And it won't.
With the exception of LeBron and the Cavs.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's teams.
The Heat with LeBron.
You know, the Pistons beat the Lakers in 2004.
But the West has been considered the better conference ever since the Bulls broke up.
The power of the league.
You're right.
And why we kind of talk about, you know, LeBron and his easy, the reason he's never been beat in the first round is because
the East wasn't that hard.
The power's not in his conference.
And I'm convinced that LeBron made it very clear that he was going to stay in the East as long as he could. Now at the end of the career, go to L.A.? Okay. And I like the fact that he's going after the best in the West. I do like that.
Yeah,
But I think part of the thinking when you're leaving Cleveland, I like to stay in the East, and he went to Miami. I still believe that was part of the thinking behind it, which makes sense, quite honestly. All right, a replay today we started with a replay of the Royals. Now we're going to start with a replay of high school.
Yeah, 2012-13 season, December of 2012, Smith Center and Pike Valley boys basketball up in Cortland. Pike Valley was up, you'll hear, 13 points early in the fourth quarter. Smith Center fought all the way back to get the win there. So we're going to hear from Doug Boucher, who coached that team that 1 year there at Smith Center, and get his thoughts on it, and hope everybody enjoys the fourth quarter and overtime of Pike Valley Smith Center 2012.
Is it true Doug Boucher is Bobby Boucher's brother?
I don't think so.
If anybody knows the water boy, you know what I'm talking about.
I think you're lying like Mike did.
Tomorrow, head coach Jimmy Walters, Osborne Boys, will replay a game that was played recently, Osborne St. John's Tipton Boys game, regular season game that was a terrific comeback. And then Friday, one of the best comebacks I've seen, the Beloit Boys, 2019 3A Boys Basketball Substate Semifinal at Riley County when they played St. Mary's, and they were down 9 with about 4 minutes to play. Came back and won that in double overtime. That'll conclude our rally week on Friday. If you missed any of these replays, they are right there on our Sports Ticket podcast. Just find the right day and show in regards to, we have it listed, not individually, but it's listed on the rundown as to what we talked about on the show. And you can go back and you can listen to some of these replays. And or you also have a lot of these coaches' interviews we've done over the last few weeks, one-on-one chats with coaching greats you can go back and listen to as well. Enjoy this rewind, this rally comeback week continuing with Smith Center Pike Valley from 2012.
And back here on Comeback Rally Week on Katy Country 94, back to the 2012-13 high school basketball season, a regular season game between Smith Center and Pike Valley, where the Smith Center Redmen won 82-70 over the Pike Valley boys basketball team there in that one, making a comeback, being down by 13 points at one point early in the fourth quarter to send it to overtime and end up winning by 12, 82-70. And at one point in the fourth quarter, a four-point swing to give Smith Center the lead.
Mason Buckmaster, nice pass inside. Zabel, turnaround shot good for Smith Center. Back down to a one-point lead as Zabel has 18. 60-59, Panthers winning it by one. Inbound pass stolen by Lynn. Layup good, and Smith Center leads. 61-60, the Redmen with the lead. Inbound play, timeout called by Pike Valley with 2:54 to play in the game.
We are pleased to be joined by the coach at that time for the Smith Center boys basketball team, Doug Boucher, who spent a season there as the Redmen coach. And I know that when you go back to this game, coach, it's one of those that I think probably propelled your kids to know that they could do some good things on the court as you got down by 13, came back and won it by 12 in overtime. What are some of the things that stand out the most from your eyes about this game?
Well, first of all, you're exactly right. That was one of those games that they kind of helped define those kids as far as being a team and as far as being competitors and having confidence that you know, as long as there was time left on the clock, they always had a chance. That's one of the things that really comes back to that I remember about that game, which was kind of exemplary. What I remember from the season was just that those kids had no quit to them. They kept working. They kept working. They never lost really confidence in what they could do. It was just keep pressing, keep pushing, keep pushing, keep working, and eventually things are going to work out for you. And that was one of those games that, some of our great players stepped up and made some great plays, and both offensively and defensively, that just, got us over the hump and got us into overtime. And then I think our conditioning really kind of took over, and we were able to kind of separate ourselves through that overtime period.
Peyton Buckmaster was one of those kids that, man, when he got going, he was going to be tough to stop. He had just 2 points in the first half, but scored 26 in the game, 24 in the second half, had 11 in overtime, and really stepped up big for you offensively. What did he bring to the table that you remember about him in that game and as a player for your team to be able to take over a game like that?
Well, Peyton was just such a solid leader, and a very unselfish player. We were trying to do what we did, through that first half and second half. I think he just realized that, us playing the fast tempo we were trying to play on a little bit smaller court wasn't as much of an advantage as it would have been on a normal size court. Mm-hmm. But he just kind of took over and started taking the ball to the basket and was having success with it. And one of the things that I always taught him, I said, man, if something works, don't change it. Just keep feeding what's working. And that really kind of worked for us. But Mason Buckmaster stepped up, younger brother stepped up and made some great defensive plays in that fourth quarter for us. Taylor Zabel, Zach Lynn, Cody Moldon were all solid that game. Well, one of the things, I look back at that season, we go into that season, and I'm missing probably one of our better ball players, Trevor Overmiller, that had blown a knee mm-hmm. in football that year and was a couple months away from being able to come back. So because of that, then, we're down the line looking at Weston Rothschild stepped up for us, Nick Johnson, Cole Lorenzen, those type of kids had to step up for us and fill in that depth that mm-hmm. we were missing with Trevor being gone. But, they just all worked and competed and got after it. And that was the game right before we were going into Christmas break. I believe our record when we went into Christmas break was 4-2. I don't think anybody gave us much of a chance of going into Christmas at 2-4. But that's a credit to those kids on how hard they worked and how hungry they were for success.
An 82-70 final score, a high-scoring game back then. Doug, we certainly thank you for taking some time to chat about this game with us and reminisce. It was nice to chat with you again, and I hope everybody enjoys this replay as well as you.
Well, I do too, Dusty, and I appreciate you doing this. It brings back a lot of fond memories for me. It was a fun year, great year, one of my most favorite years in coaching high school sports.
And now we're going to take you back to December 11th of 2012. We're going to play the final part of the third quarter, then all the way through the fourth quarter and overtime from Cortland, Kansas, Smith Center and Pike Valley. Enjoy this on Comeback Rally Week on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94.
Looking to drive baseline. Dishes off to Field. Puts up a long two. It's nothing but net for Braden Field. 9 points for Field, and that's the end of the third quarter. After three, 54-43, Pike Valley leading it by 11 over Smith Center. We're back to the fourth and final quarter in Katy Country, 94. Pike Valley leads 54-43 at the end of three quarters. We are underway in quarter number four. Right side, Swanson driving into the lane. Scoop layup missed, and a foul called on Smith Center. We'll send Aaron Swanson to the free throw line for Pike Valley. Smith Center being led in the game by Taylor Zabel with 14 points. For the Panthers, they're led by Cade Hunchess. He was 17. He had 7 in the third quarter. Free throw coming up for Aaron Swanson. First one on the way, nothing but net. Swanson now has 9 points for the Panthers. 3 of 5 from the free throw line for Pike Valley. Second free throw coming up for Swanson. That one's good as well. 56-43, 13-point lead for Pike Valley. 7:50 to play in the game. Left side, Rothschild into the corner to Mason Buckmaster. Mason back on the wing to Payton. Inside look for Zabel. He turns, swatted out by Quentin Isaacson. Rebound taken down by Mason Buckmaster. He misses the putback try. Tie-up forced by Quentin Isaacson of Pike Valley. A couple players going down on the floor. Actually, Mason Buckmaster went down, and Quentin Isaacson was trying to tear that out of there. It looked a little rough, but it really wasn't. And the inbound play, left wing, Zach Lynn. 3 on the way, halfway down, and then it's spun back in for Zach Lynn. His second three-point make of the game, he has 10. 56-46, Pike Valley's lead is 10. Cross half-court, Swanson nearly lost it, but got it back into the corner to Hunchesky. Hunchesky, left side, driving in, picks up his dribble. Nice cut to the basket by Isaacson. Layup missed. Rebound taken down by Mason Buckmaster for Smith Center. Isaacson, I think, was surprised he was that open. Free throw line jumper for Lynn is good for Smith Center. 12 points for Zach Lynn. It's down to an 8-point lead, 56-48 in favor of the Panthers. 7:02 to play in the game. Swanson left side to Ehlers. Ehlers into the corner for Hunchesky. Hunchesky puts up the shot. High arcer off the front rim. No good. Rebound Mason Buckmaster for Smith Center. Gary Loring just shaking his head on the far side. Here's Peyton Buckmaster and a foul on Cole Ehlers. The first on Ehlers and the 15th foul called on Pike Valley in the second half. Hunchesky checks out for Pike Valley. Cox back in for the Panthers. Gets a few words from Gary Loring, the head coach. Inbound play is thrown out of bounds by Mason Buckmaster. Apparently it was tipped off of the Smith Center play. I was looking down on the inbound, and it's a turnover for Smith Center that goes back to Pike Valley. 10th turnover of the game for the Redmen unofficially. Pike Valley with 12 unofficially. Up ahead, Zach Lynn trying to steal the ball away from Aaron Swanson. Gets called for a foul. It's his third. 16th foul on Smith Center, so the next one puts Pike Valley in the bonus. Correction, that's a fourth personal foul called on Zach Lynn. So Lynn takes a seat, and Molzon checks back in for Smith Center. Inbound play coming for Robert Cox and the Panthers. Cox in for Isaacson. Back to Swanson. Swanson, cross half court. He's guarded by Molzon on the right side. Inside look, Zabel knocks it out. The ball tipped, still loose, and Isaacson has it in the corner. Trying to skip it inside, and a three-second violation on Braden Field. He just shakes his head. Yes, he knew it. Panthers' 13th turnover of the game. Smith Center gets it back, trailing by 8 with 6:25 to play. Buckmaster, cross half court to the right side. This is Molzon, back to Peyton Buckmaster. Right side, Molzon has it. Fakes inside, back to Peyton, left side. Into the corner, Mason Buckmaster. Peyton Buckmaster's pass is tipped. It's loose. Last touch by Isaacson out of bounds. Possession stays with Smith Center. Hunchesky checks back into the game for Ehlers for Pike Valley. Smith Center basketball, the inbound play. Molzon in for Mason Buckmaster. Left side to Peyton Buckmaster. Skip pass, baseline. Shot blocked by Quentin Isaacson. He took it right out and then threw it away. A steal for Smith Center. Mason Buckmaster in the lane. A blocking foul before the shot. The shot does not count. Called on the floor. Doug Boucher wanting the basket, but it will not count. or actually it does count. They say the shot counts. It looked like originally they were saying it was on the floor, and then they say the basket counts for Mason Buckmaster, so he's got a chance for a three-point play, and a timeout called by Pike Valley as Smith Center all of a sudden is within 6 points at 56-50. Right now it's a 7-0 run for Smith Center. Pike Valley led 56-43. They lead by six. We're back on Katy Country 90. Free throw coming up for Mason Buckmaster after the timeout, and he puts it down. A three-point play for Mason Buckmaster. He's into double figures with 10. It's 56-51. Quentin Isaacson up the floor right side. Brings it across half court. Goes up on Peyton Buckmaster, and a baseline shot good for Isaacson. 14 for Quentin. Coming out, Robert Cox tries to get the steal. He knocks it out of bounds. The possession stays with Smith Center. 58-51. Pike Valley up by seven. Cross half court. That put an end to a 8-0 run for Smith Center. That shot by Isaacson. And then Zabel going inside gets called for taking an extra step. Traveling called. The 11th turnover for Smith Center. They put on the full court press. Inbound play coming for Huncheski. Up ahead, Swanson across half court. Outran the pack. Isaacson goes into the lane. Kicks it back out. Swanson on the right wing, and Isaacson got away with a travel. Swanson. Checked out top by Molzon. Crossover dribble and a carry called on Swanson. Gives it back to Smith Center. 15 turnovers for Pike Valley. Still 5:32 to play in the game. It's 58-51. Inside look. Zabel. Baseline for Rothschild. Banker missed. Zabel gets the rebound. Back up and good for Smith Center. Taylor Zabel has 16 for the Redmen. Back to a five-point lead at 58-53. Steal Peyton Buckmaster. Bank shot good. 58-55. Peyton Buckmaster has 10. Inbound play for Swanson. Timeout called by Gary Loring. 5:04 to play in the game. All of a sudden, it's a three-point lead for Pike Valley. Pike Valley 58, Smith Center 55. We're back. It's on Katy Country 94. Smith Center turning up the heat on Pike Valley. They're on a 12-2 run. It was a 56-43 Pike Valley lead. It's now 58-55 Panthers. Left side, Cade Huncheski takes a couple dribbles. Gets it back out on the right wing for Swanson. Nearly a double dribble. A three for Swanson. Front rim no good. Rebound Peyton Buckmaster for Smith Center. This game becoming very interesting as Pike Valley had a 13-point lead. Peyton Buckmaster drives in. Bank shot missed. The rebound goes to Robert Cox. Panthers have it back. Swanson slows things down. Right corner. Huncheski picks up his dribble. Cutting toward the basket. Swanson up. Shot no good. Molzon called for a foul. And Aaron Swanson headed to the free throw line. Fourth personal called on Cody Molzon. Swanson to the charity stripe. Is 4-for-6 so far for the Panthers in the game. He has 10 points for Pike Valley. 17 for Huncheski, 14 for Quentin Isaacson. First free throw coming up for Aaron Swanson. On the way and off the front of the rim, no good. He's now 4-of-7 from the free throw line. Substitution into the game for Smith Center. Lorenzen back in for Molzon. Another free throw coming up for Swanson, looking to extend this lead for Pike Valley. Second free throw for Swanson, bounces high and no good. Rebound Zabel for Smith Center. Swanson misses a couple important free throws. It's still 58-55. Lynn has it for Smith Center. Left side to Mason Buckmaster. Back out to Lynn. Lynn, Peyton Buckmaster into the corner for Mason. Driving baseline, gets by a field. Back out to Lynn. Left side to Peyton Buckmaster. Peyton spots up for a long two. Smith Center is within one as Peyton Buckmaster has 12. He knocked that one down. 58-57, Pike Valley with 3:55 to play. Currently a 14-2 run for Smith Center. Inside look field. Turnaround shot spins in for Braden Field. How big has he been tonight? He has 11. Back to a three-point lead, 60-57. Peyton Buckmaster across half court into the corner for Mason and back to Peyton out top. Nearly lost it but tracks it down before it goes into the backcourt. 3:34 to play in the game. 60-57. Pike Valley up by three. Zabel splits a couple defenders and traveled. Spun his pivot foot. Give it back to Pike Valley on Smith Center's 12th turnover of the game. Inbound play for Cade Huncheski. Cole Ehlers will check back into the game for Robert Cox for Pike Valley. Panthers lead 60-57 with 3:29 to play. Inbound play for Huncheski. In for Isaacson. Isaacson gets it to Swanson. The full court man-to-man defense from Smith Center right now. Swanson behind the back with the dribble across half court. Right side to Huncheski. Huncheski looking for the entry pass. Tipped out by Mason Buckmaster. Off of Huncheski, it goes out of bounds. Buckmaster tipped it off the leg of Huncheski. And Smith Center has it back. Pike Valley with 5 turnovers in the quarter and 17 in the game. Redmond have the ball. Right side, Lynn. Left side of Mason Buckmaster. Nice pass inside. Zabel turnaround shot good for Smith Center. back down to a one-point lead as Zabel has 18. 60 to 59, Panthers leading it by one. Inbound pass stolen by Lynn. Layup good, and Smith Center leads. 61 to 60, the Redmen with the lead. Inbound play, timeout called by Pike Valley. Smith Center is up 61 to 60 with 2:54 to play in the game. Timeout called by the Panthers on KD Country 94. What a comeback from Smith Center. They were down 56 to 43. They're currently in the middle of an 18 to 4 run and lead, 61 to 60. A blocking foul coming up the sideline called on Peyton Buckmaster. It's his fourth. Cole Ehlers will go to the free throw line for a one-on-one opportunity for Pike Valley. Ehlers coming into the game is 1-for-2 on the season from the free throw line. First attempts of the game so far for the Panthers, a one-on-one. He can tie and give Pike Valley the lead if he makes them both. First one on the way, no good. Rebound long, Taylor Zabel for Smith Center. Ehlers misses the free throw attempt. Pike Valley trails by one still. Across half court, Mason Buckmaster on the right side. Inside look for Zabel. It's through his hands and out of bounds. Back to the Panthers. Pike Valley down to two timeouts. Doug Boucher still has all three of his full timeouts for Smith Center. 13th turnover of the game for the Redmen. Ehlers checks out. Cox back in for Pike Valley. Field looking back. It's tipped and stolen by Mason Buckmaster. Fouled by Hunchesky. The shot counts. And a free throw coming up for Mason Buckmaster as the lead is now up to 3 for Smith Center. 12 points for Buckmaster. 63 to 60 Redmond. Now a 24 run for Smith Center. Foul was called on Cade Hunchesky. His first free throw misses for Mason Buckmaster. And the rebound to Braden Field. 3-point lead for Smith Center, 63 to 60. Swanson across half court of the left wing. Picks up his dribble, right side to Isaacson. Head fake on the three, pulls it back, right wing three for the tie for Isaacson. Bounces no good, left side rebound goes to Zach Lynn. Lynn quickly across half court for Smith Center, out top for Peyton Buckmaster. Peyton right side to Lynn. Lynn back to Buckmaster. This is Peyton out top, back to Lynn on the right wing. Skip pass, free throw line to Zabel. Into the corner for Peyton Buckmaster, and back to Mason. Mason Buckmaster to Lynn, driving in, looking inside for Zabel. Tries to shoot it over Hunchesky. Jump ball call. The possession arrow gives it back to Pike Valley. Smith Center leading by three, 63 to 60 with a minute 59 to play. Hunchesky to inbound for Pike Valley. Smith Center will set back. Actually, they're going to come up in their full court man-to-man defense. The inbound play to Swanson. Swanson picked up by Lynn about three-quarter court. Swanson between the legs with a dribble, nearly lost it. Has to get rid of it now. Throws it up ahead and threw it right to Molzon. A steal for Smith Center. Peyton Buckmaster all the way. Fouled by Swanson. The shot counts for Peyton Buckmaster, and he's headed to the line for a three-point opportunity. 65 to 60. It's a 22-4 run for Smith Center with a minute 48 to play in the game. The Redmen are up by five. Foul called on Aaron Swanson, his first. Pike Valley imploding in this fourth quarter. They have scored just 6 points. Smith Center has scored 22. Free throw for Peyton Buckmaster is good for the Redmen. 15 points for Buckmaster. Smith Center's up by six, 66 to 60. Field with a bank shot, good. Boy, if Braden Field wasn't playing the way he is tonight, it'd be worse for Pike Valley. 66-62 the score. 23 to 6 is the run for Smith Center. Right side. Peyton Buckmaster gets by Isaacson, takes the baseline into the corner for Molzon. Back out to Mason Buckmaster. Pressured out top goes to Zach Lynn. 1:16 to play. Smith Center leads by four. They back out to try to take some time off the clock. Lynn pressured, drives in, lost the ball, saves it into Peyton Buckmaster, and out top to Molzon. Molzon, left side of the wing to Mason Buckmaster. Back to Molzon. Cox is trying to foul him, and then Cox goes, that's got to be an intentional foul on Robert Cox. Oh, wow. I'm really surprised he didn't get called for the intentional. You got to go out and foul. He was trying to get Molzon, and it was pretty clear. They weren't calling the hand check. And Lynn goes to the free throw line for one-on-one opportunity. Robert Cox called for his second personal foul. First free throw for Lynn, rolling in and out. Rebound goes to Quentin Isaacson. Panther basketball trailing by four with 55 seconds to play. Cross half court. Swanson dribbled off of his foot, but right into the hands of Cox. He puts up a long three left wing. No good. Right side rebound goes to Zabel for Smith Center. Cox tries to get it out of there. It's tipped and last touch by Smith Center. They send it off the hand of Mason Buckmaster, and Pike Valley gets the possession. Cox might have been a little bit quick with the trigger on the three. The inbound play coming for Hunchesky. In the left corner, Isaacson has it. Quentin guarded by Zabel. Isaacson. Left side of the wing for Hunchesky. Hunchesky with a head fake, driving in, picks up his dribble. Skip pass right side to Cox. Open three from the right wing. Bounces high, no good. Rebound, Hunchesky falls down hard on the ground. Boy, that had to hurt the elbow when he came down. There's a foul called on whom? It's Smith Center. Hunchesky will go to the line for two attempts, or excuse me, for a one-on-one. And it was called on Cody Molzon. Cade Hunchesky to the free throw line. He hit the deck hard. See if he can get these free throws. Cody Molzon finishes with three for Smith Center as he fouls out. Redmond in the midst of a 23-6 run, leading 66-62. Pike Valley led in this fourth quarter, 56-43. Free throws for Cade Hunchesky, very important. First one on the way and good. 18 points for Cade Hunchesky at 66-63. Pike Valley trying to get back into this one. Second free throw coming up for Hunchesky. That one's on the way and good also. So Hunchesky knocks both of them down. He's now 2-for-3 from the free throw line for Pike Valley. And a timeout called by the Panthers. 66-64. Smith Center leads by two with 26.5 seconds to play. Smith Center leads Pike Valley 66-64 with 26 seconds to play. About 26.5 here in this fourth quarter. Smith Center will have the ball after the Pike Valley timeout. They're down to a 30-second timeout. Smith Center still has three fouls left. Inbound play coming for the Redmen. Zach Lynn gets the inbound. They've got a foul quick. Double team comes. Hunchesky a steal. Baseline, head fake, layup. Good for Pike Valley. Cade Hunchesky with 21. Smith Center with the ball. We're tied at 66. Peyton Buckmaster inside looking. A foul on Braden Field will send Taylor Zabel to the free throw line. Field has to control his emotion. He could easily get teed up here if he doesn't. I like the officials not having a quick trigger because Field could have easily gotten a technical there. And the officials do not want to decide this one with that at the end of this game. Two free throws coming up for Taylor Zabel. Pike Valley is tied at 66 off the steal and shot by Hunchesky. Zabel's first free throw off the front of the rim, no good. He has another one coming up. 10.9 on the clock, a 66-66 tie. That foul on Field was his fourth. This is an important free throw from Taylor Zabel with 10.9 on the clock. Zabel, 18 to lead Smith Center. Second one bounces no good. Rebound Hunchesky for Pike Valley into the hands of Isaacson. Quentin has it. Timeout called by Gary Loring with 5.7 on the clock. The Panthers have a chance to win. 66-66 tie. We'll keep it here. The Panther boys looking for the shot to win this game and avoid overtime. What a comeback for Smith Center in this game. They trailed 56-43 at one point in this fourth quarter. Currently on a 23-10 run. Smith Center at one point was on a 23-4 run, and now a 6-0 for Pike Valley to get back tied at 66 each. Panther basketball, 5.7 on the clock. Cade Hunchesky to throw it in from the far side for Pike Valley. Hunchesky looking in. In for Swanson, 5 seconds. Swanson across half court. Screens it out top. The ball tips. Swanson throws one up toward the basket. No good. And we're at the end of regulation and headed to overtime. Pike Valley 66. Smith Center 66. We've got extra basketball coming up next on Kitty Country 94. After four quarters of play, it hasn't been decided yet in Cortland. Pike Valley 66. Smith Center 66. Quentin Isaacson at the center of the floor for Pike Valley. For Smith Center, Taylor Zabel. We are getting going in overtime. Tosses up, tipped, and into the hands of Robert Cox. Pike Valley has it to start overtime. Panthers turn the ball over 20 times. Smith Center with 16 turnovers. Cade Hunchesky, a free throw line jump shot that misses for Pike Valley. Smith Center ball. Lane on the baseline. Tipped by Isaacson off of Quentin out of bounds. The possession stays with Smith Center. Leading scorer in the game for Pike Valley, Cade Hunchesky. That's a game-high 21 for Hunchesky. Inbound play, a three for Lynn. Left side, bounces no good. Rebound tapped into the hands of Isaacson. Quentin pushing up the floor for Pike Valley. Isaacson hands it off to Swanson. Swanson into the corner for Hunchesky. Hunchesky looking in, stripped and stolen away. Mason Buckmaster up ahead to Lynn. Another turnover for Pike Valley. Lynn across half court for Smith Center. Left side, Mason Buckmaster to Peyton on the left wing. Mason back over to the right side for Lynn. Inside look for Zabel. The ball tipped. Buckmaster Peyton comes away with it and lays it up and in. 17 for Peyton. Smith Center leads 68-66. 3:04 to play in overtime. Across half court. Swanson all the way. Scoop layup good for Aaron Swanson. Swanson has 12. It's tied at 68. Nice attack from Swanson. Right side Lynn, top to Keita Mason, Buckmaster, and back to Lynn on the right wing. Skip pass to Peyton, left side. Buckmaster, inside look, Zabel back to Peyton, Buckmaster, a three from the left side. Good for Smith Center. Peyton Buckmaster has 20 for the Redmen. 71-68, Smith Center leads by three with 2.5 to play in overtime. Hunchesky back here tying his shoe for Pike Valley. Swanson brings it across half court, left side to Cox. Cox back over to the right side to Swanson. Now to Hunchesky. Cade back out for Isaacson. Isaacson right wing between the legs with the dribble. Wants to drive, takes it in. Runner on the way for Isaacson. Rolls home for Pike Valley. 16 for Quentin Isaacson. 71-70. Smith Center leads by one. Out top, Buckmaster. Peyton, runner on the way. Left it short. Draws nothing. Rothschild, the rebound for Smith Center. Mason Buckmaster back into Peyton. He misses. Rebound into the hands of Zabel. Zabel back up. Fouled by Braden Field. And that's number five on Field. Field checks out. What a quality game from the senior Braden Field with 13 points tonight for Pike Valley. And he gets a well-deserved round of applause and a standing O from himself. Field finishes 6 of 9 from the field, 1 of 1 from three-point land in this contest. And he takes a seat with his fifth foul. 71-70, Smith Center leading it by one with 1:55 to play. And Taylor Zabel at the free throw line, who had a chance to seal the deal in regulation. First free throw for Zabel on the way, nothing but net. 19 now for Taylor Zabel. It's 72-70, Redmond. Second free throw upcoming for Taylor Zabel. On the way and good. So Zabel hits both of them this time. He's got 20. 73-70. Smith Center with the lead with 1:54 to play. Swanson across half court for Pike Valley. Between the legs with the dribble, guarded by Lynn. Right side Hunchesky. Hunchesky, lob pass in for Jensen, who came in for Field. Tie up forced by Smith Center. They have the alternating arrow. And Smith Center has it back. The Redmen get the ball back, leading by three with a minute 39 to play in OT. Left side, Mason Buckmaster back out to Lennon, back to Buckmaster. Mason left side, inside look for Peyton. He's driving in, the ball tipped out. I think they've got a foul on Quentin Isaacson of Pike Valley. That would be number four on Isaacson if it is indeed on him. Fourth personal called on Quentin Isaacson as we expected. 73-70, Smith Center leading it by three. Free throw for Buckmaster, nothing but net. 21 points for Peyton Buckmaster. Tied for a game high with Cade Hunchesky. 74-70. Smith Center with the lead. 1:30 to play. Second free throw for Buckmaster on the way. Nothing but net. 75-70. Redmond up by five. Pike Valley basketball. Swanson across half court. Right side to Isaacson. Spots up for a three from the right wing. Bounces no good. Rebound Peyton Buckmaster for Smith Center. Smith Center looking like they might be able to escape and pick up the first road victory in this series. Lynn, baseline jump shot, no good, but a foul called on Pike Valley. Will send Zach to the free throw line for two attempts for the Redmen. Quentin Isaacson called for the foul. That's his fifth. Isaacson finishes the game with 16 points for Pike Valley. He finishes 8 of 17 from the field, 0 for 3 from three-point land. 16 for Quentin Isaacson. Free throw is coming up for Zach Lynn, who's 0 for 1 from the stripe in the game so far for Smith Center. First one on the way, and front rim no good. He'll have another one coming up. Samuel Jansen checked into the game for Pike Valley for Isaacson. Jansen, a 6'3 senior. Second free throw for Lynn is good. 15 points now for Lynn, and Smith Center matches their biggest lead of the game. It's 76-70 with 1:13 to play. Swanson across half court to the left side. Aaron. Crossover dribble, puts up a three from the left wing, bounces high, no good off the backside. The rebound to Mason Buckmaster, up ahead to Peyton Buckmaster. Looking like Pike Valley's running out of time. Peyton has it left side to Mason Buckmaster on the wing. Mason takes a couple dribbles. Pressure defense and a foul called on Casey Jensen. That's the third on Jensen, and Mason Buckmaster to the free throw line for Smith Center. Mason has 12 points. He's 6 of 7 from the line in the game for the Redmen. 3 of 4 from the field. First free throw for Mason Buckmaster on the way. Front rim no good. He's got another one coming up. He's now 6 of 8 from the line. Peyton Buckmaster is 3 for 3 from the free throw line for Smith Center in this game. Lorenzen checks out. Rothschild back in for Smith Center. Second free throw coming up for Mason Buckmaster. Bounces no good. Rothschild, the rebound for Smith Center. Back out to Mason Buckmaster. Redmond have it. Skip pass. Left side. Peyton Buckmaster has it with 42 seconds to play. They need to foul. Pike Valley does if they want to have a chance here. Peyton has it left wing. He thought about it but pulls back knowing that he doesn't need to shoot with a six-point advantage. Mason Buckmaster pressured. Peyton has it back. Left side and Cox calling for the foul trying to get the strip of Peyton Buckmaster. Robert Cox calling for his third personal. And it's Peyton Buckmaster to the free throw line for Smith Center. 22 points for Peyton Buckmaster. He had two at halftime. 20 second half points for Buckmaster when it is counted. The most first free throw for Peyton is nothing but net. 23 now for Peyton Buckmaster. Gives Smith Center their biggest lead at 77-70. Second free throw good for Peyton Buckmaster. Cross half court. Bank shot missing from Kate Hunchevsky. Rebound Casey Jensen. Back out top of three for Swanson. Front rim no good. Peyton Buckmaster the rebound. Scoreboard said 80-70. I didn't think that was right. 78-70 the score in favor of Smith Center. 24 points for Peyton Buckmaster, including 9 in the fourth quarter, or excuse me, in overtime. He had 7 in the fourth quarter. Another free throw good for Peyton Buckmaster. 79-70, Redmond's the lead. The foul was called on Sam Jansen. Samuel Jansen is first. Second free throw for Peyton Buckmaster rolls around and good. 11 points in overtime for Peyton Buckmaster. It's 80-70, Redmond. 12 seconds to play across half court. Zach Lynn is stripped. He takes it all the way. Layup is rolling around and in for Zach Lynn. 82-70, Redmond. Lynn has 17. Cox with the... He's just going to hand it to the official. Overtime win for Smith Center. They take it by 12 and improve to 3-2 on the season as Pike Valley drops to 2-3. This was a high-scoring affair, as I expected tonight here in Cortland. Smith Center Redmond scores 16 points in overtime alone, outscoring Pike Valley 16-4 in the overtime frame to win it 82-70.
Smith Center would go on to pick up a win over Trigo right before the break. As Coach Boucher said, they were 4-2 going into the Christmas break. They would then win over Rock Hills to start 5-2. They finished the season at 9-12, finishing in third place in the Mid-Continent League tournament back in 2012-13 in the one season that Doug Boucher was the head coach for the Smith Center boys basketball team. Hope you enjoyed it today. If you'd like a CD copy or audio copy of any of the games that we've had on our rewinds on Katy Country 94 on the Sports Ticket, give us a call at the station at 545-3220. We'll give you all the details on how you can purchase copies of games in our archives from Katy Country 94 and Z96.3 The Lake. Once again, thanks for tuning in today on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.